I've got an accounting question.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. How do you lose $39 billion in 3 months? Ask the people at General Motors. This morning, GM posted the worst quarterly loss in company history. Now, here's the answer. Most of that $39 billion is a one-time charge related to deferred taxes. But some of it comes from mortgage losses at GMAC. And even if you take all that out, GM still lost money after three profitable quarters in a row. One bright spot for GM is that UAW workers have approved a new contract. So have union workers at Chrysler. The last holdout is Ford. There's a deal, but workers still have to agree on it. Elisa Roth has more.
Ford is in the worst financial shape of the big three, so in a lot of ways, the UAW negotiations were more critical for it than for the other two. But leaders of the union locals got their first look at the new contract this week, and they're enthusiastic. The question is whether the rank and file will be as excited. Harley Shaken studies labor relations at the University of California, Berkeley.
No doubt there'll be those who are angry or who vote no, but my sense is many Ford workers think that this is a very good deal, particularly given the circumstances.
The general framework of the new contract is the same as GM and Chrysler's. It includes a two-tiered wage system and a union-administered trust fund to pay for health care. But Ford is promising to invest in almost all U.S. factories, and more radically, the contract gives the union a chance to be involved in discussions about new products and other company decisions. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
How the mighty dollar has fallen. Today, the dollar hit new lows against the euro, the pound, and the Canadian dollar. That pushed oil prices above $98 a barrel for the first time. Wall Street could be in for a rough morning. The Asian markets finished higher for the most part, but European shares are down at least a percent. With the dollar sinking, investors are buying gold and they're buying bonds. Gold is above $840 an ounce this morning. That's less than $10 from the all-time high. Bond prices are also rising. Ah, yes, bonds. Safe, warm, and fuzzy. Well, guess what? There could be trouble in the municipal bond market, too. Apparently, some bond insurers have been dabbling in subprime investments. Let's get some help on this from our man in London, Stephen Beard. Stephen, what are bond insurers doing in subprime?
Well, that, of course, is the absolutely key question, because while municipal bonds are their main business, some of them have also been getting into the more exotic stuff, including the subprime stuff that's causing such problems. Now, because some of these insurers have insured a lot of that stuff, it's reckoned about $90 billion worth, there is a fear that they're going to have to pay a lot of money to compensate for all the defaults.
What's the worst case scenario here?
Well, the worst case scenario is that several of these big bond issuers could go bust. Then many more bond issuers, perhaps even American municipal bonds, would fall in value as a result. And you'd possibly then see, and this is the worst case scenario, pension funds and other investors dumping these previously AAA rated bonds on the market. And indeed, there are some commentators on this side of the Atlantic who are saying this is the second shoe of the credit crisis about to drop, and it could be far worse than the first.
Mm. All right, Stephen Beard in London, thank you.
Okay, Scott.
You're listening to The Morning Report for Wednesday, November 7th on Marketplace.org. Bottled water has turned into a $15 billion industry, but it's gotten some bad press lately. Some groups are complaining about the environmental impact, the fuel used to transport it, the plastic bottles winding up in landfills. One company is taking the high road. Today, Fiji Water unveils a new eco-friendly business plan. Jeff Tyler explains.
Within 3 years, Fiji Water claims the production and sale of each bottle will result in a net reduction of the carbon in the atmosphere.
We don't know of any company in our industry that has made a commitment as broad as the one we have.
That's Fiji Water's Tom Mooney. In practical terms, he says,
we're going to rely at least 50% on renewable sources for our energy. We're going to reduce our packaging by at least 20%. And then we'll substantially reduce waste during our manufacturing process by 33%.
John Koifman with the Natural Resources Defense Council credits the company for good intentions, but
it's still hard to justify shipping more than 1 million plastic bottles of water a day from the middle of the South Pacific when turning on your faucet at home would do just as good a job for a tiny fraction of the cost.
The company is a big player in Fiji's economy. Bottled water accounts for roughly 20% of the island country's exports. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
This is the time of year retailers need you most. They count on the holidays to make their year, really. But this year, with people worried about a recession, things could be a little tight. We get a report today on consumer spending from the Fed. Paul Brandis reports.
The death of the American consumer has been proclaimed countless times, yet through good times and bad, folks have always kept on spending. But now, with oil prices at record levels and the housing market heading south, the prognosis for consumer spending isn't good.
It is deteriorating, and I think it will be deteriorating at an increasing pace as we get closer to the holiday season.
Joshua Shapiro is chief economist at Maria Fiorini Ramirez in New York. He says the data he's looking at indicates consumers now are more interested in getting out of debt than adding more red ink.
The housing bubble pushed home prices to ridiculous levels. Now with home prices heading south fairly quickly, that game is over, and I think the consumers will be really trying to get balance sheets on much sounder footing.
The Fed report due today gives September credit figures. Shapiro says no matter what that shows, things have gotten worse since then. I'm Paul Brandis for Marketplace.
With all the spending, if you're like me, you probably struggle to build up your savings account. But we found one artist in New York who's literally giving her savings away. Nick Vanderkolk has the story.
Like most of us, performance artist Sarah Julie is terrified at the thought of living without a regular paycheck every 2 weeks. And she's held down a 9-to-5 job most of her adult life. She's used to confronting her fears through her art, but when it came to letting go of her anxiety around money, she realized she would really, really have to let go.
That's when I came up with the idea of cashing out my entire savings account, of which I have, or had at the time, $5,000.
It works like this. Over the course of an hour-long dance, Sarah hands out her savings to an audience until every last dollar is gone. There's a box near the exit where people can give it back, but they can just as easily stick it in their pockets. It's not inheritance. She didn't win a lottery.
And every single time I do this last moment, I have the exact same response every time, which is sheer fear.
She also creates these sort of challenges for people, like she'll do this thing where someone has to get the money by reaching into, let's say, potentially embarrassing places. Her husband, Chris Ajamian, who also happens to be her creative director, remembers one time when she offered a couple hundred dollars in her underwear to a guy in the audience.
And he turns to his wife, who's like sitting two like seats down, and says, do you still have those rubber gloves in the bag? She's like, yes, I do. She screams, goes into her bag, and she pulls out these rubber surgical gloves.
But ultimately, the show isn't just about how the audience reacts, or if people can live with themselves if they don't give back the money.
It's all about reassessing my relationship to cash, of what if I lost everything I had to my name? How would I wake up the next day? What I'm trying to get to at the core is that I would survive.
She might not have a choice about getting to that core if she keeps doing the show, though. After performing many times in New York and Holland, she just about broke even and even gained a bit extra in donations. But after her most recent tour in Australia and New Zealand, she's down to about 3,000. But whether or not the audience ends up taking it all, her greatest fear of losing that money has already come true in a way. That's because it's no longer really money she can spend. It's become a prop for a performance, a really expensive one. In New York, I'm Nick Vanderkolk for Marketplace.
Today is day three of the Hollywood writers' strike. Several TV shows have already stopped production because they've run out of scripts. In fact, commentator Robert Reich was supposed to appear on The Daily Show last night, but the show has gone into reruns. Reich says the Hollywood walkout is a sign of the times.
Now, this may look like the kind of strike that used to cripple American industry years ago when big labor was really big. But look more closely, and you find an issue more closely related to Chinese pirating of American movies and CDs than to a traditional labor management brawl. You see, entertainment is coming to be a larger and larger part of what skilled and creative Americans do for a living. watch the credits at the end of movies, and try counting the names. Add in all the people involved in producing musical recordings, animated computer games, books, magazines, advertising, and the ever-expanding numbers doing all this and more on the Internet through streaming media, webisodes, downloads. Entertainment is also becoming an ever larger portion of America's exports. Depending on how broadly you define it, about 12 to 15% of what we sell to the rest of the world. In short, entertainment is among our most valuable properties. But it's intangible, weightless. Easily expressed in digits, it can be sent anywhere around the world in seconds. And the cost of reproducing it is close to zero. So who's entitled to the money that comes from the sale of creative, digitized products? That's what we're trying to negotiate with the Chinese and developing nations around the world. That's also what the writers for movies and television are trying to negotiate. They want more of the revenues from sales of DVDs, ads on the Internet, and other forms their creations now take, forms they couldn't possibly have anticipated years ago when their contracts were last negotiated. Whether the clash is with the writers' union or the Chinese, the underlying issue is the most basic of capitalism. Who owns what? And in this new digital age, the answer has to be negotiated anew.
Robert Reich's latest book is called Supercapitalism. He was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, feel free to join on our website, marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.